Hello, welcome to Time in the Studio. This is a nourishing space for botanical creatives. And if you're new here, hi, I'm Sarah Marie Miller. I'm an artist, herbalist, and postpartum doula. And I just want to share a quick story. If you haven't already listened to the last episode with Caitlin Rowe of Urban Veda, you will want to be sure to check that out. She suggested a few lifestyle practices, and I started doing a couple new things, such as drinking boiled water and oil pulling each day. And I gotta say, it feels really good. And these are easy, affordable rituals that you could combine into your life. So you can check out that episode and see a little bit more about why those practices could be beneficial for you. Or you could just give it a shot if you want. And I also want to let you know I have a few of my calendars left. It's a limited edition featuring 12 cyanotypes of botanical prints. They're some of my favorite plants from my garden and friends' gardens this last year. And you can use the code CYANLOVE10 for 10% off for you, beloved podcast listener. And there will be a link for that in the show notes, but it's at www.etsy.com/shop/A to Z Arts. And I'm super excited for today's episode where I got to chat with Hannah Cole of Sunlight Tax. And she shares some super straightforward ways that you can make your bookkeeping for your creative business more easeful, interesting, and beneficial for you now and in the long run. And we also get into some ethical investing strategies to make sure you're taking care of the wise and wonderful future you, maybe 6 or maybe 60 years from now. She also has a gorgeous free gift for listeners, and there will be a link for that in the show notes as well. And we'll mention it towards the end of the interview. A little bit more about Hannah. She is a tax expert who specializes in working with creative people and their businesses. She is a longtime working artist with a high level of exhibition history, and the financial challenges of freelancers and small creative businesses are both relevant and personal to her. And she knows that describing tax concepts in jargon-free language is always a good thing. Hannah delivers engaging tax education that is art world savvy and empowering. And Hannah is the creator and host of the Sunlight podcast, where she discusses taxes, money, and career issues for creative people. Through her online program, Money Bootcamp, she helps self-employed people understand and manage their taxes and build FU money so they can stay focused on the work they love without fear of the IRS or going broke. And I love her podcast. It's jam-packed with great information. Short little actionable episode, so be sure to check that out. And thanks to all of you who listen, like, share, rate, and review Time in the Studio. It makes a huge difference, and I deeply appreciate your enthusiasm for the show. And if you super duper love the show and want to support with a few bucks each month, you can join at patreon.com/timeinthestudio. Time like the herb. And be sure to subscribe, as I have a couple fantastic episodes coming up about how to start your own podcast, what I learned from doing this podcast for over 4 years now, and how to make a more sustainable life for yourself and for the planet, doing things that you love. Before we get into it, just a quick disclaimer. I am not a financial advisor or licensed medical professional. Do not take anything on this podcast as financial or medical advice. Do your own research always and consult a professional advisor before making any investment or health-related decisions. Thank you so much for being here and doing what you do. Hooray! Here's Hannah! Awesome. I am so delighted to have on the podcast today Hannah Cole of Sunlight Tax. And I discovered her work a couple years ago through the other podcast, I Like Your Work, which I love. And I just was an immediate fan. And I subscribed to her newsletter. She has this amazing guide for deductions for your taxes that has been so transformative for me doing my bookkeeping and my taxes in the last couple of years. So I'm really excited about that. And I love Hannah's approach because she's so compassionate. She's an artist and an accountant and supports people through understanding the logistics of money as a creative. And I have never encountered anyone
who holds both these worlds with such depth of understanding. So Hannah, thank you so much for the work that you do and for being here today.
Sarah, thank you so much. That was such a beautiful introduction. I'm totally touched. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I want to see just how would you describe your work and a couple highlights of things that you're excited about right now that you maybe want to touch on, and we'll get into that deeper as we go along too.
Sure. Well, I'm an artist first. I knew I wanted to be an artist from like the time I could hold a crayon. I was bad at sports. I was always like the last one out picked on the playground, and like where I found my zone was like drawing. Like I definitely operate on a slow vibe, and you know, like in sports and multiplication table quizzes and stuff, I was like, that was never my jam. So like life drawing, totally into that.
Yes.
So I'm an artist first, but I'm basically through the School of Hard Knocks, I just came to learn the hard way, the need for really good financial information, especially taxes, because, you know, like most, first of all artists and creative people pretty much are self-employed. And when you're self-employed, you have to do your own bookkeeping. You have to figure out your taxes. There's this whole other component of taxes that we're not educated about called self-employment tax, which we're subject to. And it like makes your taxes higher than you thought. And I was like, oh my God, what is all this? So basically the economics of my life really shifted when I had a baby living in New York City. It like brought my studio practice to a screeching halt. The economics of like living in New York City, the economics of childcare. I was like, oh, the math doesn't work anymore. And I just wasn't prepared for that. And what I ended up doing was going back to school for accounting to start a tax education company for creative people in my world. So I can tell you the long version. That's the short version, but that's basically that's what I do. So I love just talking to creative people because they're my people. It's my community. Cause I think we as creative people are so poorly served by the financial world, the tax world. Like that world is so, we rarely see ourselves reflected in it. And we're so often judged and misunderstood. You know what I mean? How many of us have like sat with a tax person and felt them judging us and like, this is just a hobby. When are you going to get a real job? You know, like that kind of talk. So I just think there's a real need for just education from somebody who like, not just a little bit gets the life, but like is an actual working artist and like really knows what depth other artists are working from and how intelligent and driven artists are, but how much we orient our lives towards something that's different from money. I think that's kind of the crux of the issue.
Wow. Yeah, that's so beautiful. And I relate to so many parts of your story, like the kid on the playground that's like, I just don't care about sports. I just want to color. So
totally. And I grew up in Boston, which is such a sports town. And oh, I was just like, this isn't for me. This just isn't me.
Yeah, that would be rough. I could see that. And I love too, just that you're serving artists because we are so underserved and there's so much brilliance in the creative community and there's so much potential for us to thrive and to create something really special and to build a future for ourselves. You know, there's like, I've been kind of reworking my relationship with money in the last few years, like starting to tackle my student loan debt that's just through the monster of compound interest, which can be like an angel or a devil, depending on which side of the coin you're on.
Yes, like, it can.
You know, I kept paying and nothing, it just keeps staying at the same level. So yeah, I'm like starting to work with my money more. And there's that idea of like what you appreciate appreciates. And so I love the idea of paying attention to our money because it's very easy to not pay attention to it. But I think if we can build a beautiful future for ourselves and one that allows us to be more creative, because if our base needs aren't met, it's like, how can you be creative? You know?
Totally. Yeah. And I think I think when you are really passionate about something, you know, when you're a creative person and we tend to focus on our amazing work and like who that touches and what it does. And, you know, it's awesome. That's what I do too. And I think it's great, but I think it's really easy to start setting, like to get in a wrong relationship with money. You know, it's like you have one too many conversations with a financial person where they're acting really judgy towards you and like you don't make enough or what you do isn't real or you're not an actual professional. You start feeling like you want to reject the world of money. And in fact, like, okay, so money people are having this like cultural misunderstanding with you. They don't get you, but you still have to operate in a world that uses money. And so we still have to live in this world. So just like understanding it, I think it's really important. And I think like one of the concepts that I really love to teach is just about the neutrality of money, just thinking of it as a tool, as opposed to attributing good or evil to it. Because I think a lot of us start to make the mistake of thinking of it as bad. And once you do that, you start sabotaging yourself really quickly. It's very, if you think of money as bad or people who have money as bad, it's very easy to start making financial decisions that hurt you. So kind of pulling away from that money is evil and just back to neutral. It's just a tool. It's like a hammer. Hammer's not evil. If you smash a window with a hammer, you're doing something terrible, but you can build a house with a hammer. You know, it's just like amplifying the person behind it. That's what money does.
Oh, that is so good to remember. And it's something, yeah, that's definitely been unfolding in my perception too, because I've always, not always, but I oftentimes in my life was like, if people have money, they're a terrible person. And it's like, okay, that doesn't really set me up to have money, because then I perceive that as being horrible. And I think just reflecting on the people who have supported me in the past, mm-hmm. like different, you know, working with different accountants, doing my taxes, like there were so many people that just perceived, oh, that's just a hobby. And all of these receipts that you've collected for the year mean nothing, and just throw them away. Like you can't use those deductions. And so that was something that was really helpful listening to your podcast recently. You had an episode that talked about the difference between deductions and
itemized deductions and business deductions.
Yes. Yes. Itemized deductions and business deductions. And yeah, the idea of itemizing versus deductions for a business. So that is a great episode. People should definitely look into. Is there anything you want to touch on there? Just
sure.
Quickly, that means for listeners.
Yeah, I'm happy to clarify what that means, just for, because there's probably a couple of people listening, at least a couple who are like, wait a minute, what is the difference?
Yeah.
So I think part of it stems from the fact that a lot of us use the word itemizing in an incorrect way. Itemizing in taxes is a very specific meaning. And what that means is, first of all, to understand, itemized deductions go on a Schedule A on your tax return, and business deductions go on a Schedule C. So just from that piece of information, I want you to understand they're separate, they're independent, and they have no relationship with each other. So what itemized deductions are every U.S. taxpayer gets an initial chunk of income tax-free, right? So that you get to earn up to X amount without paying income tax or at a 0% income tax rate. And you can either have that amount be a fixed rate, which we call the standard deduction, or it could be at a variable rate. And that variable rate one is called itemized deductions. So when we say you itemize, the black or white, you, this or that of it is you either itemize or you take the standard deduction. Most of us take the standard deduction. 90% of US taxpayers take the standard deduction. So highly likely that you, the listener, take the standard deduction and don't itemize. But a lot of us, because we don't know what itemizing means, we hear the words from an accountant like, you don't itemize. And we start thinking, oh shit, I got to throw out my receipts for my business, because we have that confused for business deductions. And I'm just here to tell you it's different. So itemized deductions are mortgage interest, state and local taxes capped at $10,000. Charitable contributions and healthcare expenses, medical expenses only when they exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. It's kind of a mouthful, but those are the big four. And if you've got those and your bucket of those fills up past the amount of the standard deduction, which is for tax year 2022, that's $12,950. That's the taxes we'll be doing come 2023. So if you have more than $12,950 of various itemized deductions, then you're going to itemize because you get to pick the bigger number. And because that's a substantially high number, most of us don't. So that's kind of the takeaway. So the thing that you really need to know is that if you have a business, what having a business means to the IRS is just you have a profit motive. Are you trying to make money? And if the answer to that is yes, you have a business and you are entitled to take business deductions for that. So there, I hope that clarified. But if you want to we can go even further down the hole. If you listen to the Sunlight podcast, I do have a whole episode that kind of gets in even more depth on it. So
yeah, it's so fantastic. I really liked that episode. It was helpful. I'm curious. I think it's maybe in that episode or another one, but where you talked about the best way to keep track of your receipts. I am curious. I had somebody tell me you could just take photos of your receipts and then have a file of like, keep that in a file in your folder on your computer of just photos of all of your receipts and then, you know, electronic receipts. Is that true? Or do you need to have the physical like paper receipts?
That's a great question. A photo is okay. I mean, it has to show everything that's in the receipt, you know, the date, the amount, that kind of stuff and what the items were. But as long as you have that and, you know, a photograph can be fine, then it is okay to get rid of the receipt. And, you know, if you've ever looked back through old receipts, you probably noticed that a lot of receipts use this like invisible ink that like it turns to white in a couple months. So like you might've kept your receipt and you find that it's like unreadable after 2 years. So actually a photograph is a great idea. And even, you know, taking photographs and sort of filing them away manually, that can be a little bit labor intensive, but I just want you to know that there are apps out there that make it pretty simple to just like snap a receipt. And some of them even will hook into your bookkeeping software. So there's, you know, this is one of the genius items in technology, making life easier for small business owners like us.
Oh, cool. That's great. Do you, off the top of your head, do you have a suggestion for an app for that?
I'm trying to think of, I don't honestly have one that I love. I have one that I use and don't love. I use HubDoc and that it documents everything really well. So I have everything documented. It's not the most user-friendly. There's always like login issues. It's not the greatest. I do know that there are some apps that are better. Like QuickBooks has a receipt scanning app. I believe Wave Accounting might have a receipt scanning app. And I actually think like a quick Google search probably would come up with 10 other receipt scanning apps that would be helpful, but I haven't done that research in the last, you know, 6 months.
That's super helpful. Thank you. Yeah. I've just been doing an Excel sheet for all my bookkeeping so far, but I've been thinking of switching to Wave or something that's like a little bit more automated. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious how to make bookkeeping sessions a little juicier. So I've been trying to get myself to enjoy doing my bookkeeping. Like when I do it, I actually like doing it. There is a magic to knowing your numbers.
Oh yeah.
And I love it, but it's hard for me to get started. So I'm like, oh, do we just light a candle and make ourselves do it each month? Or do you have a secret for making a ritual around bookkeeping?
I do a little bit and it sounds kind of corny or artificial, but I have found it really works too. First of all, I live by a schedule. So I like to just put the time on my calendar and respect it. So like I said, I was going to do it. I'm going to do it. If you honestly just make yourself, if you really feel resistance to bookkeeping, then the two things I will say are one, don't force yourself to do a 6 hour session. Just sit down and do 10 minutes because literally the hard part is starting. And if you do that, you will find it's not as bad as you thought. So if you can make it through the first 10 minutes, you'll be fine. That's actually the hard part. So like, don't overdo it the first time and make yourself feel overwhelmed and feel hateful towards the experience. The other thing I really like to do is I like to give myself a treat when I do bookkeeping. So that can be, you know, you can be as indulgent as you want on that. I sometimes if I really need it, I'll like have to have like a pastry and a delicious coffee, like do a lot. Sometimes I just like, you know, might have a beer at the end of the day and just like, I just put on music that I like and I try to do it at a clean desk. And like, it's also nice if I can get my kids kind of under control somewhere else. Like, so it's a quiet time. That just creating positive associations with it really does help make it feel like a thing you can kind of come to and look forward to over time. And I like to think of it as self-care. Like when I'm sitting there doing my books, I think like, and there's another deduction and there's another deduction and there's another deduction. So you can definitely like turn it around in your mental framework, I think.
That is so beautiful and helpful. I think the idea of just scheduling it is really helpful for me. And then, yeah, creating like a little bit of a reward for doing it. And I can attest to just starting is the hardest. Cause then once I get into it, I'm like, oh, this is kind of fun. Like entering things in and it feels good to know your numbers. So,
oh yeah.
Realize where I'm wasting energy, where to direct more energy. Like it's really helpful.
That's awesome. Yeah, for sure. It's good to see where your money is going and just think of it as like lowering your taxes basically, which is effectively what it is. I mean, because really a lot of why self-employed people need bookkeeping is not really for very elaborate reasons. Like we don't need financial accounting. We don't need CPAs doing audited financials. What we need as a self-employed person, you really just need to know what your profit is, how much you're making, because that's how much is getting taxed. When you know that number, you can calculate for yourself approximately what tax you're going to owe, and you can stay ahead of your tax bill. So you really only need it for taxes. You don't need all the other fancy stuff. And I think it's really easy to get overwhelmed and think like, you know, you like see what the software you're working with has to offer and you're like, wait, what's an equity account? Wait, what? And you just like get into real confusion and like, you don't need to worry about all that stuff. You really don't. So.
Yeah. Well, that's helpful. I'm curious, just thinking of different ways of budgeting and allotting money to different kind of categories. I've started researching, I think it's called the JAR method, where it's this idea of you have a certain amount of money that goes towards like your necessities and then a little bit towards education, a little bit towards saving for retirement, a little bit towards saving for like a big something fun, like a trip or a house, and a little bit towards like giving back to your community or giving to someone or something, some organization, just the idea of that creating that flow. So it's not just about doing things for yourself, but creating, supporting the world we live in. I'm curious if you have worked with that or thoughts on the JAR method or ways of like kind of paying attention to money.
Yeah. So I tend to stay pretty focused on just like knowing on, I'm trying to think. It's like, I think that budgeting is so personal and it's because I'm so often teaching in groups where the diversity of the people in the group is huge. And so to one person, if you name a number, they're like, oh my God, that's so high. I can't take it. And to another person, they're like, oh, easy. Okay. What else can I do? And so it's really hard to say, unless you're using just ratios, it's kind of hard to get specific with budgeting stuff because it's like money can kind of trigger people and it can bring up feelings. So I tend to stay away a little bit from advising on that because I really respect how, you know, one person's need for money is to like look at it every single day. And another person's need is to know they're okay if they don't look for 2 weeks. And so there's just so many money personalities that I find it a little hard to have a one size fits all. So that said, what the JAR method, at least as I understand it, is really great for is sort of allotting the totality of your money so that you have intention about where the pieces of it are going. And I think that basically on a larger level, the point and the goodness of doing budgeting at all is to have intention, right? So that you aren't just like getting to the end of the month and being like, oh shit, it's all gone again. Wait, I didn't do the things I meant to do, right? We want to avoid that. You want to be kind of like moving towards things in your life that you want to happen. That's what any good budget is doing. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit of a non-answer, but it's just to say
that's like, so helpful.
Yeah. I think, you know, I like to really, I do a lot of like reframing in my work because I think that a lot of us have these like triggered responses about money and about what things are that can really be bad for us, like can kind of be against our best interests. So for me, bookkeeping is self-care. That's one of my reframes. And the other one is budgeting. I think of a budget as a freedom plan or like a map to freedom, because really what a good budget is you setting your intention for where it should go and in what proportion. And so instead of, you know, I think a lot of people listening probably hear the word budget and they think like restriction, limits, rules, like stuff that feels bad. And I'm just here to say, no, budget is how you maintain your intention. And so that's why it's almost like we need new language for all of the things in money, because we're also triggered by the words that have been out there.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I love that you're honoring people's nervous systems. It's kind of like nervous system support doing your bookkeeping too. Like, okay, how can you like, you know, ground and find a sense of ease in being present with what's actually happening with yourself and with your bank accounts, you know? So I love that you're doing that reframe. I think that's really helpful. And I think the word budget is so triggering. So I try to think, I'm starting to think of it more like intentional money arrangement. Like, okay, I'm going to intentionally set this over here and set this over here. And yeah, just starting to be a little more mindful of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. I think it's awesome. It sounds like you're doing really good work, Sarah.
I'm trying. It's like all new, but it's so fun to rework that my relationship to money, because it was not always in a good place. So I'm tiptoeing towards a better place.
I love it.
Things I see. I know going to grad school was the time of my life and so fun. And I also know so many of my peers, you know, we're still like in a big boatload of debt. And mm-hmm. So, you know, thinking of saving for retirement versus paying off debt, I'm curious if you have any ideas of how people can kind of reconcile both those things. Cause like my brother's really into Dave Ramsey. And so he's like, oh, you need to pay off all your debt before you do anything else. And I'm like, that just feels horrible. Like, mm-hmm. I want to do both at the same time. So I'm curious if you have any ideas about that.
Yeah, that's a great question and a little tricky, right? Mm-hmm. I think there is kind of an order of operations in personal finance, and there is really good reason for the order of operations. So if you want, I can kind of outline what that order is.
That'd be great.
Okay. So basically the first thing you want to fund, if you have, first of all, just to even zoom out even more before doing the order of operations, the point is like living within your means is kind of the key to doing anything. So like if you're spending more money than you bring in, something's not working. And that is you cannot get out of a hole from that position, and something has to change. Either your spending has to get reduced or your income has to increase, possibly both. So that's the baseline. Like without that math, there's no moving forward. So with that said, when you have a little surplus, and hopefully we work on increasing the surplus, the order of operations goes emergency fund first. And that's really important because the emergency fund is what keeps you from, you know, bad outcomes, right? It prevents disasters. So if you, I don't know, broke up with your partner and you like really quick had to like get out of the house and like put down first, last, and security on a new apartment, for example, that's the role of an emergency fund. Or, you know, a hurricane comes and a tree smashes your house, whatever, you know, there's lots of disasters that can happen. That's first. health insurance is actually in there too. I know that a lot of young people like feel like we're invincible. I'm saying I'm young. I'm not that young, but like a lot of young people feel invincible. And so a lot of us kind of skip out on healthcare, but I just want to kind of, you know, come in as the, I don't know, like voice of reality and say that like medical debt is one of the biggest sources of bankruptcy. It is the single biggest source of bankruptcy in the United States. And that sucks. That's not great about our country, but it is true. And so it actually is not just for your health, it's for your finances that it is really important to have at least some minimal healthcare coverage because it prevents bankruptcy, right? So it's like that stuff, emergency fund, healthcare, that those are like putting the oxygen mask on you so that like you can survive disaster. Once you get past those two things, then we move into, you know, allocating the rest of your money. So typically we'll say pay off high interest debt first. And the reason there is because compound interest makes your debt grow bigger. So that's like a burden. That's like a ball and chain where the ball gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So really important to like get rid of your unsecured high interest debt as fast as you can. So that would be typically credit card debt. When I say unsecured, like secured debt is something where there's some collateral. So secured debt would be a home, a car, something where if you didn't pay, they'd take the thing, and that's the security. Credit cards are able to charge such high interest rates because there's nothing securing the debt. So they charge you for that. So you want to get rid of that. And then the thing about it is there's a little bit of a gradient that happens with debt that you have. Not all debts are created equal because not all debts have the same interest rate and not all debts get you to a better place, right? So buying a bunch of furniture and clothes or whatever, you know, like fun spending on a credit card is considered, you know, quote, bad debt. Even that sounds a little judgy. I'm not trying to judge anybody, but that's not really getting you to a better place in life. And so typically we want to say cut, you know, get that out if you can. And ideally don't run up, you know, pay off your credit card every month. But as you go to lower and lower interest rates and more favorable terms on debt, the priority about paying them off lessens, right? So some student loan debt has lower interest rates. And so if you have a really good low interest rate, you might not need to be such a priority to pay it off as quickly. In the world of, you know, rising interest rates, like depending when you got the loan, you may or may not have like high versus low interest rate. The sort of baseline of when you are setting aside money for your future, like for retirement accounts, putting money into tax advantaged accounts like HSAs, health savings accounts, things like that. What you want to be doing is actually investing the money in those accounts. That, you know, as scary as that sounds to somebody who's totally uninitiated in the world, investing is actually a key and critical component to growing wealth over time. It's something that I think people who felt historically disadvantaged, you know, women, people of color, immigrants, like a lot of us never got an education in that stuff, but it's really important to understand it and understand the numbers behind it, because without doing it, you really don't get that wealth building that you can be getting. So when you are investing, you know, in a basic mix of index funds in the stock market, for example, the sort of average rate of return that most economists use as like a baseline for what you get with investments is 8%. So 8% compound interest is how your money grows over time. And 8% doesn't sound huge, but when you look at a growth curve for compound interest. And I can give you, Sarah, if you want, like one of my favorite tools in the world is the Securities and Exchange Commission interest calculator. I love plugging numbers into that and like seeing how money grows over time. Because once you start seeing that, it starts to be like, oh, that's why I want to prioritize this. Like I could be a millionaire with just $130 a week. Like that starts to feel fun. So basically, if you can expect that essentially your investments will grow at roughly 8%. That's not a promise. It's just kind of historic. Then once your debt, once you're paying interest on debt that is lower than 8%, it starts to be a little reasonable to hang on to that debt, to not pay it off as fast and to actually start putting money into investments, you know, so you can kind of like phase in and phase out at the same time. You don't have to like pay off every single dollar of debt before you ever put a single money into investing. That was like a really long-winded answer to the question.
That was so helpful though. I think it's great to understand the priorities, making sure you have an emergency fund. It's really important in case there's an emergency. Mm-hmm. And I think also that idea of healthcare is becoming more and more relevant. You know, I'm in my 40s, and so I can relate to that idea of like being like, oh, I'm going to live forever. And then it's like, oh, wait, I might not live forever. And it would be good to have health insurance. So I think that's a great, great starting point. And then also assess, you know, getting rid of high interest credit card debt, and then kind of chipping away at balancing the savings versus like debt payoff. So I think that it's helpful to understand that order of operations.
Cool. Yeah.
I'm curious, like thinking of investing for creatives and for plant people, it can sometimes feel a little icky or burdensome. I think through your podcast, and I also read a book, oh gosh, Money for the People, I believe. Mm-hmm. But there's an idea that if we grow our money, we can make a bigger difference in our communities and for the planet. You know, if you have money, extra money beyond what you need to survive, you can donate it to organizations you believe in and do other things. So I'm curious, like, are there any index funds you suggest or ways of investing that maybe don't feel as icky? Because I feel like that can be a little tricky for people sometimes.
Yeah, I think it's a really awesome topic. And it's why I love working with artists and herbalists and people who are sort of mission and values driven, because you are the very people in the world whose money will make a positive difference. Like, you are the people I want to see having a bigger footprint in the investing world. So there is a whole branch of investing called, oh God, I'm going to blank on it right at this moment. Socially responsible investing is what it used to be called when I was an activist in college. And now it's called ESG, environmental social governing. And it's imperfect. There are some problems, but essentially it's a good thing. And the growth has been really tremendous in the last 20 years of the options available for ethical investing. And so basically there are organizations where you can go and you can actually put screens on your investments. So you can literally go and do a basic like index fund, except you have a screen on there for the environment, for example. So it'll follow an index fund, which is, you know, it's a lot of when I teach investing, I'm really teaching a very simple, straightforward strategy that involves index funds, not picking stocks. But you can put a screen on to say like no petrochemicals, no carbon emission, et cetera. You can also put screens on for like women-owned businesses or like BIPOC-owned businesses, good governance. There's actually the range of options for the kinds of screens you can put on your investments now are kind of incredible. Like, and the reason, just as a plug for like, jump in, you're included, is like, because people like us have gotten more involved and have started doing it, the options have expanded. So when you do environmental social governance, like ethical investing, it shows that there is a bigger market for it, and there's more scrutiny on it, and it gets better and better. So it's like a very virtuous cycle once you start getting involved with it.
Oh, that is so cool. That's great to know. I need to dive into that more. I'm curious about your course, because I know it's kind of taken some different iterations over the years, and I've just became a course creator this year. So I did a course on holistic home herbalism, which is so fun.
That's awesome.
And I'm wanting to kind of evolve it and change it for this year ahead. But yeah, I'm curious what your course is currently like and any insights you've had in creating a course for your business.
Oh, I love it because, you know, when I was doing tax preparation, I can only serve like at, you know, a couple handfuls of people. I mean, like 100 clients or so, and then I'm capped out and I can't serve more than that. But when you do a course, you can make this education and you can like serve a lot bigger audience and you can make it at a price that is reasonable. Of course, the bigger my audience grows, I hope to kind of like bring the price down even more. But yeah, my course is called Money Bootcamp, and it's basically two components. It is the first part of it is basically about understanding and organizing your systems for taxes and money. I'm a tax expert, and so it's very focused on understanding your taxes, your self-employment tax, paying estimated quarterlies, the really practical stuff that you cannot avoid, and the stuff that makes you lose sleep at night because you have fear of the IRS. It's like managing that. Then the second part, but it also includes a more holistic thing of like a personal finance plan and like the bigger vision. And then the part two is growing your FU money. And that involves learning how to invest. That involves using tax-advantaged accounts to put savings into so that you're not just saving in a sort of like brute force way, but you're actually really taking advantage things in the tax code meant to incentivize you to fund your retirement, your education, and your health so that you actually maximize the dollars that you have. You actually need fewer dollars to set aside when you do it in a tax smart way. So that's kind of my orientation. And I think that part is particularly important because I think creative people and like values-driven, ethical businesses, we so often focus on the short term, focus on the immediate. Like people buy my course a lot because of the tax need part. And I am just here to be like, yes, here is that. But also, I really want you to open a SEP IRA. Because having fuck you money is creative freedom. It's freedom to do what you want in the world. It's freedom to take up space and have your values be reflected in the world. You are the person who I want to amplify. And so that's, you know, it's, we can be so modest in this community. And I just like want to be like, no, you need this. I want you to fund your retirement and you can actually do it. And I'll show you the math that will demonstrate to you that it is actually possible with less money than you thought.
Yeah. I think it with compound interest, like things can build. Cause I think they say like generally in 10 years or so, every 10 years, your money doubles, whatever mm-hmm. you put in, something to that effect. But so that's pretty wonderful. I'll take it.
It's super awesome. Yeah. It's even faster than that. If your money's growing at 8% interest compounded annually, your money doubles every 9 years. So pretty great.
Oh, good. Okay. That's even better.
Yeah.
I'm curious in terms of, you mentioned SEP IRA, like what about a Roth versus a solo 401k?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all of those things that you're mentioning are all different kinds of tax advantaged accounts that are built into our tax system as a way to give you an incentive to make your money grow faster when you put your money in these vehicles. So they're all the same type of vehicle. There's different ones with different rules. So in my mind, like if you've never done any of them before, don't stress about which one, just do something. I think a lot of us like overthink the small stuff and we miss the big stuff. Like, are you funding it? Are you funding anything at all for your retirement? If the answer is no, stop fussing about which account, just pick one and go.
That's great.
Yeah. So for most people, the place to start is a Roth or traditional IRA. The I in IRA stands for individual. And the reason that that word is there is you can do that on your own. So the individual means you do it on your own outside of a workplace. So generally speaking, if your income is below certain pretty reasonable income limits, you can access these accounts. And for tax year 2022 coming, you know, the one that you'll be doing taxes for in a couple months, the limit that you can put in is $6,000 into a traditional or Roth IRA. And then there's some other accounts where you have even bigger options. You can put even more money in. And so, you know, if you haven't fully funded a traditional Roth IRA, don't even listen to the next part. Just do that. Start there. But if you're taking full advantage of your traditional or Roth, then the next step is to move into something where you can put even more money. And that would be a SEP IRA is a really great option for self-employed people. In a SEP, you can put 20% up to 20% of your profit. And a solo 401k has a little bit more regulation around it. There's a little bit more admin stuff to it, but it's also a really powerful vehicle where you can put $20,500 in per year, tax advantaged. So if it's a traditional style 401k, then if you put the $20,000 in this year, it will lower your taxable income by $20,000, which will give you a pretty massive savings on your tax bill. And that is the incentive. So, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I think I need to take your course for that this year. I'm like, wow, this is good inspiration. I want to honor your time because I know you have a little one to take care of, but I want to also touch on your art because you make beautiful paintings of plants and other things. And so I'm curious just to hear a little bit more about your art work and how you balance doing art and the accounting side of things. Like, how do you juggle those two sides?
Thanks. It's so nice to be asked about my art. Balance is, I don't know, a myth. I don't know if I have it. I can't switch back and forth very easily. I tend to get hyper-focused in whatever I'm doing. And so to me, what has helped me is working in seasons. So I work in my tax office and I teach and I do all my programming. And, you know, there's kind of a heavy season, like January through April is like a big season for me and a little year-end stuff. And then I like kind of close it down or bring it to like a minimum. I put it on simmer, you know, on the back burner, and then I'm in my studio. So I sort of do one and then I do the other. I don't go, you know, like back and forth. But I'll be honest with you, in COVID, there were three massive pieces of tax legislation that got passed in rapid succession. And I had to learn them very quickly and like implement them with all my tax clients and like teach in my programs. And it snowed me under. I was like, so I do have to say COVID like took a real bite out of my practice. And I'm pleased to say that I have a show on the books for October 2023.
Awesome.
Officially back on the horse, officially like making sketches for my next show. So
wonderful. We'll see. Do you have like a vision for that? Or I love the, you had an exhibition, I think it was about weeds and plants that grow in the places they aren't supposed to. And I was like, oh, weeds are my favorite. I love weeds. Weeds are medicine. So I'm curious.
I love it that the weeds are your favorite. That's so exciting to me. They've become a metaphor for me. That's kind of my subject. You know, they are nature. They're just not the nature we approve of. Like, they don't care what we think of them. Weed is just a human label put on something that has no biological definition. It's just a plant that's on the wrong side of the border. So there's many like, you know, political metaphors to be made with weeds. And they're just so hopeful to me, you know, like weeds just don't give a shit. You know, they're going to grow in this little crack in the sidewalk. I see them like growing out of walls, like vertically in like just the tiniest little bit of dirt, like growing out of the side. And it's just, I don't know, what's more hopeful than that? Making life so right where you are.
Yeah. Yeah, making it work. I feel like they're like the ultimate transformers. And oftentimes they're the most potent medicine too. Like dandelions are, every single part of a dandelion is so profoundly amazing for your body in different ways. So yeah.
That's incredible.
Love your weed lover.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Except near my fig trees, which I'm very possessive over.
Oh my gosh. That's so cool to have fig trees.
Growing up in Boston, we could never have a thing like a fig tree, like the winter's too harsh. And so just, I now live in the mountains of North Carolina. I'm not too far from Tennessee and you can grow a fig here. It's the most exciting thing in the world to me. So as soon as I like realized that, I just started planning like every little sunny spot that I've got. I'm like, I think there's room for another one.
Oh, amazing. Oh, I love North Carolina. I got to go to Penland years ago and it's
lucky you.
Such an amazing artist, just oasis. It's really incredible.
I love it. There's amazing artistic energy in these mountains on the Tennessee side too. There's Aramont and like great, great arts culture in Appalachia here.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I love that you're, I didn't realize that's where you were. That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in Asheville.
Oh, I love that village. It's the best. I have a couple questions if you have time.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Just bonus questions. Who is somebody inspiring you recently and why?
Well, someone I just was talking about on my podcast is going to drop next week is the Reverend Dr. William Barber. He was the head of the NAACP, I think in North Carolina, maybe national, I'm not sure, but he runs this project called the Poor People's Campaign. And it's basically picking up the mission that Martin Luther King was working on when he died. And so it's like this incredible legacy and it's incredible. I mean, I just feel really driven by economic equity. That feels like my mission. And the Poor People's Campaign is, I mean, it is powerful and it is historic and it is doing really good work. And so I love the doctor, the Reverend Dr. Barber. He's an incredible speaker, very worth looking up on YouTube. But he lives in North Carolina and he runs the Poor People's Campaign. And he also runs these rallies called Moral Mondays, where we have these, you know, like protests in Raleigh, the capital here, when the state house does shitty things. So he's just like a force for good, uniting people across racial lines for economic equity. And I love everything about him. So.
Oh my God. He sounds amazing. I'm excited to follow him. Thank you for that. That's great.
Yeah.
That's a great suggestion. I'm curious, best advice you've gotten or given recently.
Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. So much. I seek advice all the time, you know, cause you can't read the label from the inside. I've definitely learned that like having people to talk to is critical. I think the biggest one for me when it comes to money. So I think this may be helpful for your listeners, Sarah, is to just let the perfectionism go. Perfectionism is not your friend when it comes to money. Everybody's made mistakes with money. There's no one who gets through their 20s without doing something really stupid in terms of their finances, myself absolutely and hardcore included. And look at me now, I'm 44 and I'm like adulting pretty well with my money, very on top of my taxes. And, you know, I come from a place of having been audited and like made all the mistakes. So just know that like, just start and it feels weird in the beginning and you won't do it perfectly the first time. And that includes with your money and that's totally okay. That's how you get better.
Oh, amazing. I love that. Thank you. I'm curious, something you're proud of.
Oh, something I'm proud of. Oh, my girls. I mean, that's an easy one.
I love that. Yeah. As a postpartum doula, like I love family and just people being connected and having like a loving, supportive environment. So that's beautiful. What's something you're super excited about in the year ahead?
Oh, this is nerdy, but the Inflation Reduction Act. So I think it did not get nearly enough press. It got passed August 18th, 2022. And a lot of us maybe were kind of in vacation mode at that time, but Congress passed, the Biden administration passed the largest climate bill ever signed. It's the largest spending on ever in the history of the United States. And it is going to reduce carbon emissions in the US in 7 years by 40%. So, you know, it's going to give money into your pocket if you want to buy a clean vehicle, new or used. It's got money to help people make home improvements over time. It is going to like put jobs back into places who get affected by climate change, like coal country, you know, places where they're fracking. There's incentives built into this legislation to put clean energy there on purpose to help shore up the lost jobs. Like it is a gorgeously crafted piece of legislation that is going to do so much good for our world. And it just makes me feel very proud to have worked to make my phone calls and knocked on doors to elect the Democrats who passed it. I say that because it was completely party line. It was 100%, you know, Democrat passed, but you know, I I'd be happy if everybody signed on to it. But in any case, it's a major accomplishment. I feel super proud of it. And I'm really excited to teach about it in the new year, because it's going to put money in people's pockets for doing the right thing. It's like the best of all worlds.
That is, even realize the implications of that or the details of that. So that's wonderful to hear about.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I mean, it was kind of like, we all thought it was dead. And then they were just like, hey, we did it. And like, I was like, where's the press? It just was like, I don't know. The reporters were on vacation in August.
I'm always surprised what gets covered and what doesn't, and remind people, vote in every election you can. Like, it's kind of baffling the percentage of young people that vote and how low that percentage is. If all young people voted, we would see a radically different country.
Yeah. And this, you know, we had to give up a lot of stuff that we wish we had had in this legislation, because we didn't have, you know, we could have done more had, you know, a different demographic voted in who's in there. But I just, you know, like, I know that as a tax person, you know, people can get really down on the system, on our democracy, on our taxes. And I just like, I really like to be the voice of hope and point people to the bright spots. I mean, my company is not called Sunlight Tax for no reason, but I just like, this is a huge fucking deal. The Inflation Reduction Act is gonna, you know, it's the biggest piece of climate legislation ever passed. It's just amazing. And we did it. So I think that's great. And we can do more. We can keep doing this, but you know, you keep knocking on those doors and making the phone calls.
Yes, and we will. And I do love the name of your company too, Sunlight Tax. I think there is so much hope in your message and in the way you communicate. So that's such a beautiful thing to recognize. Do you have a favorite resource you want to suggest to people?
You mentioned this resource that I have for people, I think will really help your listeners. If you are starting to think about getting your bookkeeping done, you know, like figuring out your deductions for the year, I have a visual guide to your tax deductions, and there's actually 6 versions of it. So you can pick the one that feels the most relevant to your line of work. So there's one for artists, visual artists, there's one for performers, there's one for online business owners, makers. So there's like a bunch of different versions. So if you go to sunlighttax.com/deductions guide, you can grab the one that fits you the best. And it is just a 1-page printable download, visual, rainbow colored. And it just explains in very simple graphic language, like how to set up your tax deductions and how to get everyone. So I spent a lot of time working on that. I feel really proud of it. So I want to make sure that you're using it and you get a lot out of it.
Yes. Oh, I can attest. It is beautiful. It's like a work of art. Like, it's just so beautiful and it's so helpful. It's just very clear and spells things out. And it's been mind-blowing and so transformative for when I do my bookkeeping. I keep it on the side. So
yay. I'm glad. I'm so glad that you use it. I'm so glad that it's helpful for you. I mean, like, that's what I do it for. So like, hearing that you're using it, it just makes me so happy. It makes me feel like my, you know, my work is landing, and that's what I want.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Well, Hannah, thank you so much for being here. Is there any last little anything you want to be sure to share before we go? And oh, how can people find you and connect with you and take all your courses? And
sure. Well, you can find most of my resources at my website, sunlighttax.com. There's lots of stuff for you there. There's the podcast, there's the blog, and it's all geared towards clarifying issues that come up for you as like a self-employed person, typically a creative one. So that is really useful. And if you are interested in a free class to learn 4 mistakes that creative people tend to make with their money and a framework for organizing and maximizing your money, you can sign up for a free class that I teach there. And it talks a little bit about the program that I offer as well. So you can learn about that at go.sunlighttax.com/register. So there's a go in front of sunlighttax.com there/register. And that's just a free class that will bring you some value and help you get things together as you start out in this next tax season, organizing your numbers. So
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much, Hannah. It's been such a delight to chat with you.
Oh, you too, Sarah. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really honored to be in this space with you. I love the work that you're doing with healing and being a doula and all this incredible, like, life-affirming work that you do. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm just so grateful for my clients and the plants and people that I get to connect with.
Awesome. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Wowie zowie. Wasn't Hannah wonderful? Thank you so much for listening, and be sure to connect with Hannah at www.sunlighttax.com. You can also connect with her on Instagram at sunlighttax, and you can connect with me on Instagram at Time in the Studio Podcast or at Sarah Marie Studio. A big shout out to Aaron Travers of the band Amptier for the show music, and thank you to you, all the you who listen, like, share, rate, and review the podcast. It makes a huge difference, and I deeply appreciate your enthusiasm for the show. If you found value from this episode, please be sure to share it with someone you love. And if you super duper love the show and want to support with a few bucks each month, and that feels doable, you can join at patreon.com/timeinthestudio. Currently, half of Patreon payments go to support reproductive justice at Colorado Doula Project. Thank you so much for being here and doing what you do. I would also like to acknowledge the people of the Ute, Arapaho, and Cheyenne Nations, where this podcast was recorded, also known as Boulder, Colorado, and pay respect to elders past, present, and emerging. And I'm Sarah Marie Miller. You've been listening to Time in the Studio. May our efforts benefit all beings, and I look forward to connecting with you soon. Until then, toodaloo.